Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSR HealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Everyone, it's time for Pep Talk. I'm Sharky Zartman, and we are at the start of a new year. And boy, do I have some incredible guests lined up to get you fired up to live the best year ever. Today, we have Justina Lasley, the author of several books, including her latest, Wake Up, Use Your Nighttime Dreams to Make Your Daytime Dreams Come True. I don't know about you, but I've had some crazy dreams, and when I woke up, I was left wondering, what was that all about? I had no idea. So she will explain some of these things to us today. And we also have Dr. Fred Helms, the author of Heart and Soul, who will unveil the myths, mysteries, and miracles of organ donation. But first up is Justina Lasley, the founder and director of the Institute for Dream Studies, an internationally recognized program that promotes the understanding and value of dreams to help people reclaim their authenticity. Her new book, Wake Up, Use Your Nighttime Dreams to Make Your Daytime Dreams Come True, introduces us to easy methods for assessing the incredible wealth of wisdom available nightly in our dreams. So welcome, Justina.
Thank you, Sharky. I appreciate your sharing your time with me.
Well, this is so interesting because, you know, as you know, we all dream, and a lot of us don't remember our dreams, and some of the dreams that we remember make absolutely no sense at all to us. So this is going to be very interesting. So how did you become involved in studying the power of dreams?
Well, it was something that it seems like it was a path laid out, in that I had always been interested in my dreams as a child, but never realized that people paid attention and used dreams for guidance. And, gosh, as an adult, you know, having raised my family, I heard that a person came to our church while I was out of town and talked about dreams and preached about dreams, and I could not believe that they were really talking about dreams from the pulpit, you know, not paying attention to all the dreams in the Bible and stuff. But it just piqued an interest in me, and I joined a dream group, and when that minister left, I decided I was too involved in this. I had to keep the dream group going, and I developed new ones, and then I went back to graduate school to get a master's in transpersonal psychology with an emphasis in dreams. So the past 25 years, I have been just passionate about helping other people understand this important wealth of information that we're sleeping through every night, or wake up, like you said, and we're like, what was that about?
Yeah.
Kind of thing, but not knowing what to do with it.
Right, right. Well, you say that they can help us reclaim our authenticity. You know, when I'm dreaming, you know, it seems like it's just all over the place. I mean, I don't feel very authentic at all.
Okay. Well, I do. I think dreams, you know, really don't care about time and space as we know it. Like, we put all these restrictions on what is possible and not possible.
Mm-hmm.
So as far as things having any sequence or making any sense, like there can be two people in the dream that did not live at the same time, and they seem to know each other, but they didn't know each other. Or you may be two ages in the dream. You may be a child, and then suddenly
right.
You're a parent.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't make sense
Yes. Only
in the way we look at our life.
Right.
But dreams have so much bigger message to give us. And you think about it, and you know, dreams have been around us 24/7 every day of our life. Our psyche knows and understands us, who we were born to be. And what I find over and over with myself and with other people that I work with is that the dream wants to move us back to that incredible human being that we were born to be. It wants us to be clear, not from other people's expectations, not from things that we think we ought to do, but what are our talents, abilities, and capabilities to move forward and make the world a better place.
Okay. You know, I was reading your book, and you had a lot of dreams in there with some of the interpretations. And the one that caught my eye was the man who had dreams of his old girlfriend and being with his girlfriend. And he shared that, I guess, with his wife, and it caused a lot of problems. And the interpretation that you have in the book says it wasn't really about his old girlfriend. It was about him. Can you explain that?
Yes. Well, dreams really, my dreams only care about me, and your dreams, Sharky, only care about you. So, and how you get along is our personal guide. So there are other characters that show up in our dreams, but those show up to give us an idea of how we're acting and reacting within these different aspects of ourselves. I mean, we are not one person acting the same. You now, you know, as host of the radio program, have to take on a certain persona and do certain things. In another setting, there may be, another Sharky showing up. And for the listeners, understand this. Sometimes you want to work. Sometimes you want to play. Sometimes, you know, you feel very responsible, and sometimes you want to be irresponsible. Well, in order to show us, the dream is going to assign those roles to different characters. Because it's in all of life, we can definitely see what other people are doing wrong with their lives, but it's much harder for us to accept that we are doing it to ourselves. So these characters are acting and reacting in different ways, and when we say, what part of me acts like Jane? I always help people say, in that particular dream, the person that they were having an affair with in the dream, I said, what are three characteristics of that person? And as I recall, they said creative, fun-loving, and spontaneous.
Oh.
And so I asked the question, do you know that part of yourself, that creative, spontaneous, and fun-loving part? And the man got really sad because he said, I used to know that part.
Oh, there you go.
I lost it.
Okay.
This was a girlfriend that he had had in college when he was, you know, all passionate about living a creative life and everything. And then as he grew up and got caught in a job and the responsibilities, he lost it. And so when he realized it was that he was yearning for, not this other woman, but for what she represented, it just switched his whole life. And I see this is a question people are always like, I'm so embarrassed to tell you, but I was having an affair with so-and-so,
mm-hmm.
you know, in my dream. I was like, no, that's great. Now
mm-hmm.
to claim that part for yourself.
Ah, okay. I like that interpretation. That doesn't make you feel so bad when you wake up.
No. People are surprised when I say, oh, it's good. Oh, you were having an affair. That's really great. They're surprised. And that ties in, too, Sharky, to the, we talked about New Year's resolutions. You know,
right.
Everybody, here we are at the beginning of the year, and that is a great way to, for people to think of these New Year's resolutions. Who knows better what our heart and what yearns to do, what our heart yearns to do, and what we're capable of doing, our dreams. And they are going to lead us into this. So I love for people that January period for the listeners to be thinking about and paying attention to what they're dreaming, writing it down, and looking to it for guidance about what will this year bring for me.
Okay. All right. I love this. In fact, I'm going to get something to put on my bed to write it down, because otherwise you forget them. But what about recurring dreams? I'm going to tell you about a dream I have at the start of every semester, just about, okay, that it's kind of funny, but, you know, I keep having it over and over again. Do you want to hear it?
Definitely want to hear it.
Okay, well, I'm a teacher, and I have a dream usually, you know, a few days before we start up our new semester, where I walk into the classroom and I write up my name up on the board, and when I turn around, all my students have animal heads. They're human, but they all have a different animal head. What is up with that?
That's all you want to tell me. I don't want to interrupt you.
That's basically
that's
it.
Enough. This is one thing that I want to encourage people, is not to give up because all they remember is this image of an animal head. That would be enough for us to work on for the rest of the
I know.
You know? So here's some things that I would say, is in the recurring dream, we need to pay attention.
Okay.
Because recurring dreams keep coming back to us with basically the same message over and over. And until we get that message and then act on that message, it's going to continue to come.
Okay.
And I find that once people get the message, then they can move on. But I would say these things to you, and we don't have time to go into every detail of it, but you might want to make some notes, is to pay attention to the setting of that room. It's a classroom.
Right.
But is it your classroom that you're in now? Really look around and try to see, because it's likely that the classroom changes and there may be some relationship to other things in that classroom. How many people are there? Is it your normal size class, or are there more or less people in dreams?
Okay. You know, it's usually about the same, about 45.
About the same.
Yeah.
And then what animal heads are they?
Oh.
Do you know?
All different kinds. There's cows, there's monkeys, there's, you know, bird heads, you know, I mean, it's just, you know, I mean, you know, I kind of get a kick out of it now.
Yeah, what did you think of? What were you thinking?
You know, I mean, I just, you know, at the start of the school year, I'm always, you know, excited to go back. But, you know, I mean, you never know what you're going to get. So.
And I thought when you were describing the first thing, when you started naming barnyard people, I was like a barnyard. You know, you don't know and stuff. And then when you were naming the other things, I thought of a zoo. It's like. It's like a zoo. I mean, these are human beings, but it's like I manage a zoo.
Exactly. Exactly.
You are the zookeeper.
Okay, I'm the zookeeper. Okay.
Well, I don't know. For me, I feel real strongly that I cannot interpret your dreams, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because for a zoo for you or a barnyard, it would have to do with your personal experiences.
Right.
And so you have to think of what does that mean for me? Is the zoo sound, you know, like something exciting for me, or did I have a bad experience at the zoo and an animal got out of control and I got hurt? You know, so you really have to think, what for you is like that? Like, these are human beings, but sometimes they act like animals.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I've had the good, the bad, and the ugly, because I've been teaching for a long time. But, mm-hmm. Yeah, I will pay attention. I go back in a couple of weeks, and so... I'll pay attention this time.
You said you had the good, bad, and the ugly. And, you know, I'm sure some of them, probably lambs, that are wonderful, and they
yes.
follow like a sheep.
Yes.
And then there are the elephants that tromp all over everybody. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, you think about the different characteristics of the animals, and probably human beings, you know, are in your classroom are having some of those characteristics.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I like this. You're making it make a little bit more sense to me. And so, but
good. And,
yeah.
And Sharky, one thing, you know, I always ask my clients, like, now what to do with it. Now you have that information. How is that going to help you move forward in your life? And it may be an understanding of the students. I mean, it doesn't hurt to think of them like that. Like, if I were dealing with a lamb, how would I get them maybe to be more proactive or something?
Okay.
Or do I just appreciate them as a lamb? It's nice to have a lamb in my class.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have a tiger, and you're like, now what can I do with a tiger? Do you see what?
Yeah, they always sit in the front, by the way.
Yeah, okay.
The lambs are in the back.
Yeah.
So.
I love that you're willing to share that. But I hope that people can see how all of that is going to help us live our life more joyfully, and it just is such a gift. And this is why I named this book Wake Up, is that because I've seen what happens to people that do pay attention to their dreams and follow the wisdom, and how much change happens in their life for the more positive life, then I want everybody to understand.
Okay.
It's like I have got to wake up the world and
right.
get them to follow their yearnings, their dreams.
Right. Well, it's exciting because we all dream, and you know,
yeah.
we can all learn something. But in your book, you said that most people have between 5 and 6 dreams a night. And we are usually lucky if we remember one. So what are some tips on how to remember our dreams?
Well, the main thing is intention and commitment.
Okay.
So I think you say you're remembering more dreams, and it's probably because you knew we were going to be talking. You
read
my book.
Yeah.
So one thing that people are doing right now as listeners is listening to this, and hopefully their interest is piqued. So that is intention. I'm listening,
right.
I'm paying attention. And then commit to the process. I say in my dream synergy process, dreams plus action equal change. We're having the dreams. We have to provide the action. Change will occur.
Mm-hmm.
So I want people to have paper and pencil by their bed every night. Dreams do not stick around. They evaporate. They're like vapor in the morning. So I make notes during the night, just a few words, or sometimes I write out the whole dream scenario, never turning on a light or, you know, opening my eyes. But if that doesn't come at night, stay in bed and be calm for just a few minutes and let that dream sort of saturate you. Moving back into your most restful sleep position, that often helps bring the dream back. And sometimes I think through characters in my dreams, different things that keep recurring, and that will be like a hook so I can catch the dream and then reel it back in. And just to write it down, keep a dream journal with all the dreams, and they can find, you know, an idea of a dream journal I've created on the website. But anything, but write it down and treasure. And treat these dreams like the gold and the gift that they are.
Okay. All right. Well, what about nightmares? I don't want to go back and relive the nightmare.
That's what people say. I say, make your dreams come true. And
no.
Not
all of them.
Here's what nightmares are. Nightmares are not bad dreams. They're not telling us that something awful is going to happen. Except if we don't change and listen, they're warning signs. And by the time a message gets to be a nightmare, it again has probably been coming to us for years. And finally, what does a nightmare do? It wakes us up.
Right.
We remember our nightmares.
Mm-hmm.
We may forget the 5 to 6 dreams a night, but everybody remembers terrifying nightmares. That's the purpose of a nightmare, is that we remember it. And so when people come with nightmares, I say it's time to pay attention. Just like a recurring dream, pay attention. This is important. All dreams are important, I believe, but nightmares are really yelling at us. And sometimes people have the tsunamis or tornadoes or things, death and things in the dream. Well, I think those are warnings that if you continue on the same path, you know, some things could happen in your life, and that would be negative impacts. So wake up. The dreams wants to give us some information for changing that, switching it around. But we have to pay attention. and try to understand. I think the problem for people with dreams is dreams speak in symbolic and metaphoric language.
Right.
And so we don't know how to do that. We don't think we know how to do it, but we actually do. And in the book, I keep talking about that. You know what a railroad crossing sign looks like. You know what the sign H for a hospital. Those are symbols.
Okay.
Say hospital. So we have to learn that symbolic language.
Okay. All right. So we have to get your book to understand that symbolic language. Well, let's talk about where we can get your book, your website. And I love this idea of your annual dream conference. So can you tell us about those things quickly?
Oh, yes. This year it's going to be in Virginia Beach.
Mm-hmm.
So Virginia. And it is people from all over the world who are interested in dreams. And they can go to my website and find out more information about it, but it's just so fascinating because the people from all over the world, I think, that are interested in dreams are fascinating people, and it's great. It's great fun, and it's great educationally. And my website is dreamsynergy.com. It's dream, D-R-E-A-M, synergy, S-Y-N-E-R-G-Y.com. And I would love to hear from people there. I have a video on top 10 tips for remembering your dreams and a video on recording your dreams. And may I tell them about a special, Sharky, that
Sure, real quickly. We're just about out of time.
Yeah, if they go to the website and within 48 hours of the program, if they will just put a code, Sharky2, S-H-A-R-K-I-E, the number 2, then I'll give them a discount and mail them an autographed copy of the book.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for joining us today. This was really, really enlightening and really fun. And so keep doing what you're doing and educating people about their dreams.
Thank you. And you keep paying attention.
Okay, I will. I promise. Okay. Okay. And we'll be back with more Pep Talk and Shark to Heart right after this.
With a little shark sense, you can improve your life. Shark Sense, a new book by Sharky Zartman, is a book that can teach you survival instincts. It pumps you up to live your life fully, regardless of what life dishes out. Shark Sense, a fast read with tested principles right from the shark's survival traits. You can do anything. Tap into your inner shark and get your copy of Shark Sense right now. Available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and at sharksense.org.
I'm William Shatner, and this is Jimmy. Animals like Jimmy are often left behind by people fleeing hurricanes, fires, floods, and earthquakes. These abandoned animals cannot survive on their own. If you must evacuate your home, please never leave an animal behind. If you absolutely cannot take your animal with you, never leave him helplessly chained or caged. Many animals die because they cannot escape fires or rising waters. Animals need your help. Thank you.
Call PETA today, 757-622-PETA.
These shoes are made for walking, jumping, running, and just plain style. Over 32,000 styles. Skechers, an award-winning global leader in lifestyle footwear. And now you can get Skechers without walking, jumping, or running. You can get them by clicking. Scroll down HealthyLife.net homepage and click. You can check out Skechers, high-quality shoes in styles for men, women, and children. So get in style. Get Skechers today and start walking, running, jumping, and strutting in style.
For more than 20 years, Homeboy Industries has made a difference in the lives of former gang members and at-risk youth in Los Angeles. Their free programs and services have given hope and opportunity to thousands and their signature businesses, Homeboy Bakery, Homegirl Cafe and Catering, Homeboy Silkscreen and Embroidery, and Homeboy Merchandise, offers hands-on training in a safe work environment. Donate to Homeboy today and help them continue their important work. To find out more, call 323-526-1254 or visit online at www.homeboy-industries.org. South Bay Saturdays, catch the best of 7, the best of the HealthyLife.net news at 7, 1 p.m. Pacific Time, Saturdays, only on HealthyLife.net Radio.
Hello, we are back with more Pep Talk. I'm Sharky Zartman, and it's time for Shark to Heart. And since this is a new year, I always take on a few new projects, and some of them are writing projects. And one of my new books I have in the works is called Yoga for Sharks. Now, as you know, I teach yoga at the college, and I already wrote a textbook for the college, Yoga for Health and Fitness. But I decided to go after a unique population, since this is one I can identify with. Now, what a shark is in my book, Shark Sense, this is a person who is driven, competitive, accomplished, always searching for more, can't stay still for long, and doesn't know the meaning of the word can't. And these people are usually stressed out to the max. I should know because I, you know, am one of these people. And like my dad always says to me, you're running on empty. Now, I don't see human sharks as being uncaring, cutthroat, or dishonest as they are usually portrayed. And I also believe that we all have an inner shark just waiting to be tapped into, our inner source of power. But when we do tap into our inner shark, we need yoga more than ever to help balance our lives and help move us towards our goals. And I've got to tell you the way that I came upon yoga. I was teaching at the college. I had over 300 students. I was coaching. I was playing on the professional volleyball tour. I had two young children. And, you know, so I was really, really busy. I was married. You know, still married to the same man, by the way. And even though I loved everything I was doing, I started really feeling my physical and mental health starting to suffer. And when I went in for my checkup to my gynecologist, it was just a checkup. We were talking, and I started talking to him, and he goes, I want to see you in my office before you leave. And, you know, so he sat down, and he goes, I think you need to go on Zoloft and divorce your husband. I went, what? And, you know, I mean, this was my gynecologist. And so I didn't do that. Instead, I realized that I was hitting the tilt point and I needed something. And one of my friends said, well, why don't you try yoga? And I went, really, yoga? For me, yoga was for people who were, you know, very serene and quiet and really flexible. And they seemed to be kind of floating on clouds, and that definitely was not me. And she goes, well, why don't you go with me and we'll try one together. And so I said, okay. And so we went to this class, and it was in my hometown. And so I was expecting just to see, you know, a lot of people with, you know, just, you know, average, you know, thinner bodies, you know, and the music to be just really, really soothing. And when I walked in, I thought I was in the wrong room because they all looked incredibly fit and ready to go. And I went, oh, you know, so, you know, this was fitness style yoga, which, you know, I teach fitness at the college. And so I thought, oh, okay, well, you know, I'm up for this. I think I can do this. And so we get started. A woman comes in very, very fit, very nice, serene voice. And she goes, just, you know, those of you that are new, she goes, who's new? And of course, I raise my hand. Those of you that are new, just do your best. If you're tired, you can go into this resting pose called child's pose, and you can modify the poses. You don't have to do them all. And I thought, heck, you know, I'm an athlete. I'm going to do them all. You know, I'm going to do the best. I'm going to do better than anyone in this class. That was just kind of like my competitive athlete coming out. And so it's an hour and a half class, and about 15 minutes into it, my body is shaking. It's like we hit some poses that I had never done before. And, you know, as an athlete, you have imbalances that you're not even aware of until you start working both sides of the body. And so I was really shocked at some of the things that, you know, I should have been able to do, I thought at the time, that were very, very difficult for me. And gosh darn it, I hit that child's pose, I think, 3-4 times during that class. And I was sitting there just feeling really defeated. But it's like nobody cared. I mean, no one's looking at anybody else. And, you know, so I started to go, oh, okay, well, we're not competing in here. This isn't a game. This isn't something I have to be good at. And so I just started to kind of accept where I was and give myself the space to rest when I needed to. And the final pose at the end called, the resting pose, they called it corpse pose, I think. we call it Shavasana, but, you know, I felt like a corpse by the end, where you just lie on your back and, you know, at first I was still shaking and trembling, but then just a huge calm came over me and I just went, wow, this is pretty cool. And so I had to find out more. And so I kept going back to class, kind of got hooked on it. It was really, really helping me with the stress in my life. It was something that I could do for myself instead of always focusing on, I've got to win this game, okay, as an athlete or as a coach. And, you know, I mean, take care of my kids. It's like I was doing everything for everybody else. And this was my time, my space to do something for me. And I decided, you know, I've got to share this. And so I went to some training programs and got my certification, over 500 hours of training. And I brought it to the college. And I've got to tell you that it's our students love it. My boss first said, yoga, no, not as a fitness class. He goes, you know, we don't want something like that. And I go, just let me put it in. Let's see if the students like it. And so he gave me the worst times, I think 2 o'clock in the afternoon, 7 o'clock in the morning. I mean, we had to wear Uggs and parkas because there's no heat in the gym. But the class kept growing and growing and growing. And, you know, now, you know, that was about 15 years ago. And now we have, you know, lots of instructors that teach the class. We have a new level, Power Vinyasa yoga, and, you know, the students just love the fact that they can do yoga at school and not have to, you know, go to a studio to do it. So the book that I'm writing right now is for people like me, people who don't think they need yoga, but really do, because it can save their lives. And so I'll be sharing some things with you from the book. I also have a new style called Off the Mat, because a lot of people who are sharks can't stay still. And so I just wanted to share that with you. That's one of my projects, and you'll be hearing more about it. And we'll be back with more Pep Talk right after this.
With a little shark sense, you can improve your life. Shark Sense, a new book by Sharky Zartman, is a book that can teach you survival instincts. It pumps you up to live your life fully, regardless of what life dishes out. Shark Sense, a fast read with tested principles right from the shark survival traits. You can do anything. Tap into your inner shark and get your copy of Shark Sense right now. Available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and at sharksense.org.
Attention Kmart shoppers, now you get Kmart on HealthyLife.net. Kmart carries over 70,000 items like Martha Stewart's Everyday Products, Apparel by Jacqueline Smith, Joe Boxer, Route 66, Appliances, Jewelry, and more. Everything you need. Plus, you'll get exciting weekly promotions. Go to HealthyLife.net's homepage and click on Kmart, and then you're there. And you even avoided the crowds.
I love food, and I love to eat. The cooking and cleaning part, not so much. And then I found a link to the chef's catalog on the HealthyLife.net advertiser page, and I was happy to find all sorts of amazing recipes and tips on cooking, in addition to great chef-quality kitchen equipment and savings as well. Now I look forward to my time in the kitchen thanks to chef's catalog on the HealthyLife.net advertiser page.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
Welcome back to Pep Talk. I'm Sharky Zartman, and next up is Dr. Fred L. Helms, the author of Heart and Soul, a novel about heart transplant connections. Now, Dr. Helms has over 22 years' experience as an organ donation and transplant coordinator. He is a board certified with a doctorate in counseling and a master's degree in education. Heart and Soul explores the amazing metaphysical connection between heart donors and their heart recipients. So welcome, Dr. Helms.
Thank you, Sharky. I'm so glad to be on your show.
Well, you know, I'm so glad to get to talk to you about this, because the only time I've ever even heard anything about this has been like in Hollywood, you know, some of the movies that, you know, where these things supposedly happen, and I never thought they were real. But what you're saying, obviously with your experience, that they are?
Yes, and there has been some research by some transplant doctors and psychologists of patients. It's interesting that it's particularly heart patients most of the time.
Right.
These can occur as dreams or visions or even just memories that the patients have from their donor.
Hmm. That's interesting, because I just had a woman on talking about dream synergy, and she was saying that dreams are all about us. And so how would that fit into somebody having dreams from a donor receiving a heart?
One of the researchers, and I think this may be right myself, believes that this could even be a cellular memory.
Okay.
I explore that a little bit in my book. When you think about our DNA, we have far more information processing ability than just our genome thing that tells who we are.
Mm-hmm.
So I've always wondered if there could be some kind of other memory in our DNA. It's almost like if you had a 1 terabyte hard drive on your computer, but you're only using 500 gigabytes. There's a lot left, and they call it junk DNA. The researchers do, because they don't really know what it's for, but I just wonder if it's possible for there to be memories that are stored from our lives in our cells. We know that all of our cells have the genetic memory or the genetic material for every other type of cell, so maybe it has memory as well.
Hmm. That's really interesting. So how did you get in this field of organ donations?
Well, that was sort of a serendipitous thing. I had finished my doctorate in counseling, and I was working a lot with patients who had had a loss of a loved one, who were in grief. So I did a lot of research on that, and I ended up with a job with this transplant agency. Actually, I worked with families in hospitals when a patient passed away, and I would do all the consent and everything and set up the testing and the matching for the organ donation. But the neatest part of my job was about 2 or 3 months later, occasionally, the recipients would want to meet the people who donated, the family of their donor, and I would put them together in these really cool meetings, just very positive from the perspective of the donor, of the donor's family, knowing they had helped someone, positive, of course, from the family person, or from the person who had gotten the transplant because their life had been saved. But I would see these connections. There were stories that the recipients of the heart could tell to the family about their donor. And would make goosebumps. They were just true, real stories, but they've never met this person. They have no idea anything about them. They may have been 300 or 400 miles away, but now when they meet, they start telling the family interesting things.
Wow, I just got goosebumps. That is incredible, and this happens quite often.
Well, there's a psychologist out at Stanford who says he sees it about 15% of the time.
Okay.
And primarily with hearts.
And primarily with hearts. Okay.
Yeah, I think it could occur more than that, and I believe that some people are more sensitive to these kinds of connections, and he says that too. He says particularly ladies, more of the nurturing type, who seem to be more in connection, you know, with the heart. And those are the ones who have the stories. Let me tell you a quick story. This was from one of my colleagues, and it was a little boy who had had a heart transplant. He was about 5 years old, and he and his mother go to meet the family. It had been another little boy who passed away who was the donor of the heart. And they go to meet the family, and it's in a church somewhere, and they walk in the church. And as they walk in the church, the little boy drops his mother's hand, runs up the aisle, and climbs in the lap of a random, seemingly random, gentleman in the audience. And it was the father of the little boy who had passed away and was the donor.
Oh, wow.
They'd never seen each other. He had no way of knowing that's who it was. And then as they were leaving later on, the mother asked the little boy, "Why did you do that?" And he said, "I just went with Joey." And the little boy who had passed away, his name was Joey.
Wow.
So, those kinds of connections that are just amazing. And, of course, children would feel them stronger probably, too. I know of a lot of cases where children have named their transplant. They get a liver transplant and they name it. So there is a connection there.
Wow. Well, now, you explained that, you know, you think this is cellular DNA. Well, you know, all our organs have DNA. And why in particular the heart? Can you explain that to us?
I think it's the heart because the heart is an electrical instrument like our brain is. If you think about even, if you just think about it a minute, the strength of the signal from your heart is even stronger than your brain.
Okay.
Now, it's not neural tissue. There is some neural tissue in the heart because it has to communicate with the brain. But there is something different there. And you know this. We all know this. When we're in a room of people who are like-minded, or I know you do yoga, and I'm sure sometimes you have been in a room with other yoga people, and you can just feel the vibration. Mm-hmm. I believe that comes from the heart. It's a stronger signal than the brain. It was many years after the EKG was invented that they invented the EEG because the brain signal is so tiny.
Hmm.
And I think we can feel that signal from others. And we, you know, it's interesting. If we say we're in love with someone, we don't say I love you with all of my brain.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We say I love you with all of my heart.
Right. Right. Well, that's really interesting. I never thought of it that way. I mean, it's you know, and you, in your 22 years, do you have a number as to how many people you've seen these connections between? Is it about 15% for you?
Yeah, and it's like I said, the right kind of person. I've seen it several times. I wouldn't say nearly 50% or anything like that, but I've had family members, I've had transplant recipients, their family members, all kinds of people who have had these things happen, stories, things that are different. Another one comes to mind, a guy who is a musician, actually a famous musician, and got a heart transplant and had never been an artist. And he told me, he was going home, he was in New York City, he was going home one day from work, and he passed an art studio after his heart transplant, after he was better.
Mm-hmm.
There was a sign that said art lesson. So he says, okay, I'll do that. I've never done art. He had never been good at drawing. Well, he started taking lessons, and he was really good. And he was even very good in this particular genre, and he kept doing it, and he got to the point that he could almost sell paintings. Well, later on, he met the family of his daughter, and it was a lady who had passed away, and believe it or not, she was an artist. And her favorite type of painting was what he was doing now.
Isn't that interesting? Wow, wow.
I think it's a genetic memory. I really do think there's something there. He didn't have dreams or visions or anything of that. He just started painting.
Hmm. Well, you know what? We are going to have to take a short break. But when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about why you wrote a medical suspense novel instead of a nonfiction book on heart transplants. Okay?
Okay, that sounds good. Thank you.
All right. We'll be back with more Pep Talk and Dr. Fred Helms right after this.
With a little shark sense, you can improve your life. Shark Sense, a new book by Sharky Zartman, is a book that can teach you survival instincts. It pumps you up to live your life fully, regardless of what life dishes out. Shark Sense, a fast read with tested principles right from the shark's survival traits. You can do anything. Tap into your inner shark and get your copy of Shark Sense right now. Available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and at sharksense.org.
One of the best things about the technology available today is being able to listen to HealthyLife.net on the go or while I'm at work. Typically, headphones or earphones are required, and let's face it, sometimes they break or get worn out or lost. To find my latest solution to this, I found the Earphone Solutions website while browsing the HealthyLife.net advertiser page. There are plenty of options from basic inexpensive on-the-go earphones to studio-quality headphones for when I really have time to enjoy everything from rock to bach. Earphone Solutions on the HealthyLife.net advertiser page.
For all your live or pre-recorded webcasting needs, come to earthchannel.com. Get your web-based message out to a select group or the whole world. It's easy. A pioneer in webcasting, earthchannel.com provides the best products and services to big corporations and government users. And now, the same technology is available to you. They have the best earthcast encoders, servers, and products to meet your technical needs. But wait, don't want to mess with technical stress? No problem. They'll do it for you. EarthChannel.com is your answer. You can use webcasting for lots of things, like advertising, marketing, customer support, training, and don't forget, web radio and TV. In fact, you're listening to a live Earthcast right now, so come to EarthChannel.com. Actualize your audio or video webcasting needs today. You can't beat the friendly service or the price. Call EarthChannel.com at 800-849-8978. That's 800-849-8978.
If you like to spend your television viewing time learning about some of the things that you may have missed in history class, or if history was your favorite subject, then you should check out the link to the History Channel on the HealthyLife.net advertiser page. Order DVD sets by series or by subject matter right from our homepage while you still enjoy your favorite HealthyLife.net show.
You're listening to HealthyLife.net. Millions of listeners know the secret, now you do too. Positive talk 24 hours a day, every day.
We are back with more Pep Talk. I'm Sharky Zartman here with Dr. Fred Helms, and he is the author of Heart and Soul, a novel about heart transplant connections. And we've been talking a little bit about this connection, and, you know, there have been a few movies that have been put out, and you were talking about the one called Return to Me. And tell us a little bit about that story and whether or not you actually think that that is possible.
Well, yes, that was a movie, I think, about a man whose wife had passed away and was a donor, and a lady got the heart transplant from her, and later on, he meets her. He doesn't meet her in any arranged way. He doesn't know that she's the transplant recipient of his wife's heart, actually. But they begin to go together and develop a connection, and later on, I think she finds out accidentally from some information or something that she's the recipient. And so there's that idea of love in the heart and returning back to him, which is really an amazing story. And it could be based on a true story.
Wow. Wow. You haven't seen anything like that in your practice, right?
No, I have not. Not directly like that.
Okay. All right. That's amazing because, you know, sometimes when we see these movies, we just go, oh, there's no way that could possibly ever happen. But it's interesting that it could. And let's talk a little bit about your book. So you say this is a medical suspense novel, and this is on heart transplants and recipients and donor, that connection. Why a suspense novel instead of a nonfiction book?
Well, it's actually about a transplant doctor who's seeing this happen, and he's trying to figure it out. He's working with a lady psychologist who has been seeing this happen quite a bit with transplant patients. And I did it as a fiction novel. Well, it's just a good read. It's sort of a happy, sad kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But there are privacy issues with patients who get transplants.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Those kinds of things. And I really just wanted to write something that people would like reading and that would be uplifting. And, you know, would help people think about being an organ donor, about transplants, and how they really can help people, and it is a wonderful connection that's there.
Okay. And so I think a lot of people are would like to be organ donors, but they don't really understand. I think there's some reservation that if they have donor on their license, that they might not receive adequate medical care if they're in a serious accident. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I've heard that argument fairly often, Sharky, but the fact is they have to have good medical care to end up being an organ donor.
Okay.
And the doctors don't consider organ donation. They consider saving a person's life.
Okay, that's good.
It's only after death is actually declared, and it has been written in the chart, basically, that death has been, that the doctors know the person has passed away, before organ donation is considered. And, you know, those are the questions that people ask. Does it cost anything? Most organ donation agencies are nonprofit. The patients who get the transplant are on a list. It's all anonymous by how that works. They match by blood type and how sick they are and how long they've been waiting. It has nothing to do with a wealthy person or whether they have insurance or not these days. It's as fair as it can possibly be, but there are a lot of people waiting for transplants and not enough transplants for the people who need them, so it is important for people to think about it.
Okay, so it's based on need then. It's not, because I was going to ask you, how do you decide? Are you the one that decides who gets a transplant?
No, even the transplant doctors are not the ones who decide. It's a government agency that has the computerized list, and the system comes up with who is the best match.
Okay.
And it looks at how sick the patients are and how far away. With transplants, you can't go very far. That's one of the things that I talk about in my book about hearts. We only have about 4 hours for a heart to still work after it's transplanted from the time it's removed from the donor until it's feeding into the recipient.
Okay.
There's a little bit in my book about the doctors trying to figure out a way to keep hearts viable for longer. But no, the system is as fair as it can possibly be.
Okay.
And as equitable as it possibly can be. It's nothing to do with the doctor, as I said, or the patient or anything like that with their monetary ability to pay.
Okay.
All
right, that's good to know. I know that you've been helping for a long time the family of the donor with their loss and grief. Now, do they get to know who is receiving the organs? Do they get that information, or do they have to wait to be contacted by the person that received the organs?
That's a good question. Actually, at first, it's all anonymous, and it's very little information they get. Like it was a 60-year-old or a 40-year-old lady who received the heart, something like that.
Right.
Nothing about where they're from, any other information. And the same thing for the recipient. They might know it was a 27-year-old who was in a car accident with my heart on it. But that's all they know. And they may be 300 or 400 miles away. But if both the family and the recipients want to meet or want to correspond, they can. We had a lot of cases where the recipients would want to write a letter to thank the family.
Right.
And then they would write the letter, and then later on they would want to actually meet. And that all has to be arranged through the organ donation agency. It's not like it's a surprise, you know. Both the family and the recipients would know, and all of it would be arranged.
Okay.
But I do want to comment that I have never had a family that regretted that ability to know about people they've helped.
Okay.
Just to know that they've helped other people is a positive thing for most families.
Okay, that's good to know. But basically, it almost sounds like the recipient has to make the first contact?
Yes.
Okay.
Usually they will do that.
Okay.
Most donation agencies have like a liaison who is trained to work with families, who's a counseling type.
Okay.
And they will work with the family and the recipients in setting that up and getting them together. And then another thing, most places will have some kind of big thing later on, maybe every year for recipients and donor families, and they can even meet publicly in a big. Ours was a picnic, a transplant picnic.
Oh, interesting, interesting. Okay, well, you know what? Most states allow people to specify donor on the driver's license, and this is legal consent, but you say it's also important for families to discuss donation. Why?
Yes, it is. It is a legal consent, and when you put donor on your license, it's good nationwide, but the family... person's family is usually going to be there, and it's always good for your family to know your wishes, for you to discuss all of these end-of-life things with your family so they understand if you want to be kept on life support, if you want to be a donor. Those kinds of things are very important for families to talk about. So I would include it with that discussion with your family.
Okay, so, the advanced medical directives are very important, but is there any way that a family could, if a person had donor on their license, that they could overrule that?
They could not usually legally overrule it in most states, and there would be a long discussion with the family about that. But I would think if it was going to be so hurtful to a family, and I haven't had this happen before, but I know the organ donation agency would look into how it affects the family as well.
Okay.
But there have been cases where people didn't agree.
Right.
The transplants were done, and later on they turned around and they said, well, in the grief of the moment,
right, exactly,
the decision, but now I see that it was the right thing to do.
Right, and it's not their choice. And so, okay, we're just about out of time, so tell us about your website and where to get the book.
Yes, the book is available on Amazon and at Barnes & Noble, places like that. My website is fredlhelms.com. The name of the book is Heart and Soul. And most people who have read it think it's a good read. It's an easy read.
Right.
But I really appreciate you letting me talk about it, and I do hope people will think about being a donor to help other people.
Right. Well, it's wonderful to have you with us today and to shed some light on this because, again, a lot of people don't think it's possible, but obviously it is. And so thank you very much for being on the show, Fred.
Thank you.
With a little shark sense, you can improve your life. Shark Sense, a new book by Sharky Zartman, is a book that can teach you survival instincts. It pumps you up to live your life fully, regardless of what life dishes out. Shark Sense, a fast read with tested principles right from the shark survival traits. You can do anything. Tap into your inner shark and get your copy of Shark Sense right now. Available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and at sharksense.org.
With so many wonderful authors appearing as guests on HealthyLife.net, you can easily support their work by browsing the Barnes & Noble link on our advertiser page. Browse for books, or even an e-book, DVDs, movies, music, games, gift cards, and more. Find the Barnes & Noble link on the HealthyLife.net advertiser page.
Pep it up with positive energy power right here on HealthyLife.net.
Hey, thanks for joining us today on Pep Talk, and to my guests, Justina Leslie and Dr. Fred Helms. Until next time, I'm Sharky Zartman, and here's to your inner shark.